The old world is dying. The new world struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters. With those words from Gramsci, I welcome you to the Time of Monsters podcast, sponsored by The Nation magazine. This week, we're going to be taking up a bunch of monsters, but in a maybe more comedic rather than fearsome mode. Ron DeSantis launched his presidential campaign. You know the old saying, you only get one chance to make a first impression, and if you're running for president, you only get one chance to, like, you know, launch it in a your campaign in an election cycle. And DeSantis did it. He did it on a Twitter Spaces, which, when it he was gonna do it, was already a lot of people raised questions because it's a famously glitchy app. And there was like, you know, isn't DeSantis worried that this could crash and burn? Guess what? It crashed and burned. But I think the whole incident says something not just about DeSantis, but about Twitter, social media, and Elon Musk's, I think, increasingly prominent attempt to become the kind of Rupert Murdoch of social media, and to turn Twitter into a forum, a right-wing media outlet rather than just a social media outlet. And to talk about all this, I'm very happy to have on Parker Malloy, who runs the excellent newsletter, The Present Age. There'll be a link on the show notes. She's a very astute sort of commentator with a special focus on media. So let's just start with the launch. What do you think? What do you think happened?
I feel like it went about as well as anyone expected. I mean, like, as you mentioned, there was a lot of people were like, hey, this is a pretty glitchy platform. Are you sure you want to do this? And it glitched, as everyone expected it to. There were minutes of silence. There was weird mumbling. The quality was all over the place. It was chaotic and kind of an odd choice, just generally, because, you know, like you said, you only get one chance to make a first impression. And even if you look at some of the presidential campaigns that have not succeeded, they at least have good launches. I mean, Kamala Harris, she had a really nice launch for her presidential campaign. I mean, she didn't stick around in the race very long, but it was a good launch. But for DeSantis to kind of pop up and be like, I'm going to do this on this audio only is such a weird choice as it is. Like, that seemed a bit bizarre, but
yeah, well, not only is it audio only, but it's like of a, you know, lower quality audio than, you know, you could get on even many podcasts. I mean, yeah. I was actually kind of surprised, because, like, afterwards I wanted to track down a recording, and there's actually, the DeSantis campaign, as far as I can tell, did not make a good quality recording of the speech that he made to launch his campaign, right? Like, which you know, like, anyways, so there's the kind of glitchiness. I think the size of the audience is perhaps worth remarking on, because as Alexander Ocasio-Cortez noted, you know, she's done these streamings where she's playing video games, and that have gotten like a large audience, like, you know, 400,000 or more than this thing did, which, like, I think, you know, like, the audience numbers swerved wildly up and down. I think at peak it might have hit like 300,000, but then, you know, was like diminishing throughout it, which again is maybe an indication that things aren't going well. So to get an audience of, you know, let's say generously 200,000 to 300,000 for a national presidential launch, when, you know, you could have gone on cable TV and gotten millions, it seems like an odd decision.
Yeah, I mean, although if you think about it, it makes so much, Ron DeSantis as a politician is extremely online. Yeah. He is the internet distilled into a human being. You know, his campaigns have been, they center on these social media buzzwords. You know, everything he talks about that doesn't make sense to a person who isn't spending all day on Twitter or Reddit or 4chan or anything like that. If you have someone who's like, DEI and CRT and CSR,
Well,
like
there's stuff like ESG, which even I wasn't even sure
ESG.
what that means.
Yeah,
I had
if
to look it up.
there are so many things that it's just like normal, most people, voters will not know what you're talking about. I mean, it was odd. Like you said, there didn't seem to be any sort of recording that they put out, because personally, let's say if I were in that position, if I were like, I'm going to launch a presidential campaign on Twitter Spaces, I would record my own audio locally, keep it, and then put out my own audio on my end later. Like that would make total sense. You would have higher quality stuff. It would sound better. But no, it seems like it, he announced his presidential campaign on what is essentially a glorified conference call.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. No. And I mean, I think the Trump campaign got in a few good licks about this. And I think one of the early ones before it even started is, well, this is a good move for Ron DeSantis because he's so socially awkward. Perhaps a little scene audio only network is the way to go. Certainly. I mean. The on He's online, but maybe in a different way than Trump. I mean, a lot, as Nikki Haley said, like a lot of what DeSantis is doing is trying to be Trump. Trump used social media, whereas I feel like DeSantis is being used by social media. As someone said, Trump is a poster, DeSantis is a reply guy. And so I feel like he has the he has sort of fallen under the sway of Elon Musk. And weirdly, I mean, a lot of it seemed to be done to please Musk. And they also had another Silicon Valley plutocrat, David Sacks on, who was also like, wanted has this Silicon Valley obsession with the quote woke mind virus, and was trying to egg Trump on, and was also trying to get Trump trying to get DeSantis to comment on the other favorite topic, which is Bitcoin, which
Bitcoin,
DeSantis
yes.
assured was not going to be touched. And again, this is like such online niche stuff for what is a national campaign. Now, I gotta say, obviously not a fan of Trump, but you go back to 2015, 2016, right? Trump, first of all, did a stunt announcement, famously coming down the elevator, hired a crowd to make it look impressive, which is what you do. You want to have a showmanship. And made the racist incendiary statements about Mexican rapists, and about China's eating our lunch, but was like actually talking about real issues. Like we can disagree, obviously I disagree with Trump's xenophobia, but there is like a constituency in out there in the real world that is worried about immigration, especially among Republicans. There's a constituency, certainly, of people, not just Republicans, but also Democrats, that worry about trade and was saw these trade agreements as being bad. There's a constituency within older Republicans that are worried about Medicare and Social Security, and Trump went after other Republicans on those issues, as he's now going after DeSantis. And so Trump was like, he used Twitter a lot. He was like a demonically effective poster, but he was using it. He was using it to advance stuff. He was not like beholden to it. And DeSantis really seems like a guy who's like a prisoner of Twitter.
I think it so much of it has to do with the people they surround themselves with. I mean that there's that Christina Pushaw or whatever her last name is, like she's extremely online. She's constantly insulting people. It seems like
She's blocked me, by the way.
Yeah, I think she has me blocked too. Donald Trump still has me blocked as well. But you know, it's one of those things where it's just like when you the people you surround yourself with for a campaign kind of dictates the tone of your campaign and what you do, especially if you're Ron DeSantis and your campaigns have all been very local. You know, you ran for Congress, that's very local. You ran for governor, that's still pretty local, you know. But then you start getting into running for president and all of these things, and you have to start talking about national issues, and you can't just say, you know, anything. I mean, what Trump did in his 2015 presidential announcement was he set the topic of his campaign. It was immigration. He right from the start. It was horrible. It was xenophobic. It was I disagree with all of it, etc. But that's he set the topic right there. You knew what he was running on. And the DeSantis announcement, I have no clue what he's running on. I mean, I'm aware of what his policies are because I am way too plugged into the internet and to politics and everything. But if I'm someone who doesn't watch the news every day, I just, you know, if I just passively take in information, which is kind of, you know, I mean, that's your average voter who is not plugged into all of this stuff, I'm not going to have any clue what Ron DeSantis is running on. And I think that one thing that the people are counting on, because his policies are essentially the same as Trump's, they're counting on him being a younger, more dynamic, more youthful version of Trump, because Trump, you know, like Biden, is getting pretty old, you know. So it's one of those things where he's just not charismatic at all. And you see this footage of him him laughing really weird in public, and him being like, "What's your name?" And the guy will be like, "I'm Jeff," and he goes, "Okay." You know, it's like this is not how a normal politician works. And part of the issue there is that DeSantis, I think, has kind of walled himself off from traditional media. He makes a point of only going into things that he knows he's going to get favorable coverage. I mean, the most mainstream media thing I saw him do recently was the interview he did for the Time magazine cover that Molly Ball wrote. That's I think this week's episode or issue of it, and it was a pretty flattering profile of him. And I think that if it was something that sounded like it was going to be unflattering, that he would have panicked and backed out of it. And I think that that's kind of something that they've got to, I don't know.
It is a problem, because I mean, I think, and we've seen this before with DeSantis. I mean, like, he does not take criticism well. I think in, you know, even though he won as governor, in both times that he was running, there were moments in the debate where he was like, clearly his opponents were able to get under his skin. And if, you know, that's in that context, imagine what it's going to be like on a national stage. On this Twitter Spaces event, he had, you know, they promised that they were getting a wide spectrum of questioners. And, you know, like, you know, one of the people asking him a question was like Chris Rufo, who's like advising DeSantis on his education policy. So it's like, well, yes, if you have a DeSantis advisor asking him questions, you are going to get softball questions. Yeah. That seems likely.
And both Musk and David Sachs are both big DeSantis supporters. You know, it's like the whole thing was, which I understand DeSantis wanting to have friendly questions and wanting to have supporters ask them, but it doesn't seem sustainable. And I think maybe part of the lesson that they're taking here, which probably is the wrong lesson, is, well, Joe Biden hid in his basement all of 2020. Like, that was the big narrative on the right. And yeah, I mean, because Joe Biden was running against Donald Trump, and that election essentially was Trump or no Trump, and Biden was the no Trump, you know. And that's was enough,
And there was
you know?
also like a global pandemic.
Yeah.
This
It
is
was, it
cool.
wasn't like he was just doing that for fun, you know? He wasn't just hiding away, but it's something that I think that DeSantis and his people probably think that if they have a bunch of money that they can throw at this, which they probably will, that they can kind of use brute force to get him through the primary. And if he gets through the primary, every single person on the right who is bad-mouthing him right now is going to go and vote for him, and they're gonna turn and they're gonna be the biggest DeSantis supporters from July 2024 until Election Day. You know, that's typically how primaries end up working. Most people will gravitate towards the nominee, and I think that that's kind of the plan, to just have a bunch of money to flood things with ads that where he doesn't have to speak to people directly, and hope for the best, and maybe it'll work. I'm not counting him out. You know, I think that was one mistake a lot of people had with Trump, was they were like, look at this fool. But you
Yeah,
know,
no, I
the
know, I know. I mean, given the amount of money he has and given the sort of support he has from conservative or right-wing media, especially the Murdoch Empire, it would be a mistake to count him out. You know, having said that, like it seems like, you know, there seems to be a lot more ways that he's not connecting. Compared to, you know, Trump 2015, and he's running against, like, you know, Trump, who, like, you know, is the overwhelmingly popular among Republican voters, and also is able to, like, challenge DeSantis on many of these fields. I mean, if he is too online, you know, as I said, like, Trump's ability to use social media shouldn't be discounted. And you know, like, again, I don't want to fall into the drill trap. Like, you know, you absolutely do not have to hand it to either ISIS or Donald Trump. But on the other hand, like, you look at the videos, you know, like, the Trump's communication team, which actually seems like better than anything he's had, like, in the past, like, they were, like, releasing, like, a lot of, like, you know, very funny videos. You know,
That AI generated one with the
There was one that was like, had all these voices of a fake Twitter spaces saying, "Where?"
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Musk, with DeSantis, with George Soros,
Hitler
with
and
Dick
Satan was
Cheney,
in there.
yeah, Hitler, all your favorites.
It was a funny video, you know, and it really kind of captured the chaos of the actual Twitter spaces. I feel like Trump has a really solid digital team right now, and I don't know what, you know, I guess we'll kind of see how that plays out, but it's been really wild to watch. And I think back to the 2016 primary, there was one moment that it was Trump during one of the primary debates where he just spent like 2 minutes just tearing into Jeb Bush and the entire Bush family. And it was genuinely funny. And it was one of those things where it's like, it reminded me of this moment with DeSantis, yeah. You know, because in that debate, Trump ended up being like talking about, he insulted Barbara Bush, he insulted George H.W. Bush, he insulted George W. Bush. He was just like, your whole family is awful. The 9/11 happened on your brother's watch. Like, yeah. That was one of those things that I'm just like, you know what? Fair. He really got the crowd confused for that moment, because they were like, oh, are we supposed to turn on Bush this hard or not? And
no, I remember that, and he did wither, and I think Jeb said something about his mother, and then Trump responded something to the effect of, you know, yeah, go back and run to your mother.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Trump's a bully, right? And obviously, like, you know, like 99% of the time it's horrible because he's bullying marginalized communities and ethnic and racial groups. But yeah, the 1% of the time where he's like bullying fellow Republicans, it's pretty funny.
I can see the appeal of if you are someone who believes the same thing as Trump and you see him bullying all these groups that you also don't like. Like, I could see why those people are like, yeah, this is my guy, you know, but...
Well, actually, and that actually gets to, like, the other, DeSantis' sort of response to all this, because just today, the New York Post and others are reporting, like, he's coming up with this new line, which is that Trump has moved too far to the left, that Trump isn't willing to fight Disney. And I gotta say, like, again, first of all, this is something that we already saw in 2016, like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio said, well, Trump's really a Democrat, and, you know, can we trust him on these conservative issues? And, like, at the time, it didn't make a lot of sense, because, like, if you have a guy who's talking about, you know, Mexican rapists, then you can say, like, oh, he's really a liberal Democrat. And certainly, like, after 4 years of Trump as president and everything that's happened, it doesn't make sense. But even beyond that, it's a misunderstanding of the Republican electorate, because, like, they don't, within the party, they don't see it as a left-right thing. They see it as a, you know, establishment versus MAGA. It's like establishment versus the people. And, you know, it's like character. I just don't see how characterizing Trump as too far left is going to get you, like, any credence or support within the party. And it just seems like it's a bizarre take that's coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, one thing Trump is good at, I'm just kind of saying, like, it's effective, yeah, is that Trump will take every possible position on an issue, yeah, in like the same sentence, and, you know, he'll kind of bounce around and he'll say, oh yeah, I support this, and then the very next day he'll say he doesn't support that. But DeSantis sometimes, like, you know, he comes right out and he says what he thinks, you know, it's cleaned up, like, he's not telling you exactly what he's going to do, but he'll say, like, things like, yeah, freedom should mean, you know, Republicans should be able to do what they want, and Democrats should be able to do what Republicans want, you know, like that sort of stuff where it's like, oh man, you are saying the quiet part out loud. You are telling us how you would rule, and it is a little scary, man. You know, do you want a president sitting around, like, all day being like, I'm gonna fight Disney? You know, like that, I don't think that's what anyone wants or cares about, you know. Disney movies have, I feel like maybe, and maybe this is just wishful thinking on my part, maybe they've overstepped a little bit with some of the You know, but what about the children? Like, you know, anti-LGBT kind of outrage. You know, in Florida, you hear about teachers getting investigated for showing a movie that had like, there was like, oh, well, one of the characters is gay, and they hold hands at one point, and it's like, you're gonna investigate someone over that? You know, like that sort of like. Really, that micromanagement of everyone's life is supposed to be everything that they stand against, but obviously like what you say and what you do are two different things a lot of the time. But it'll be interesting. I think it'll be an extremely online campaign. I think both candidates will move wildly to the right, trying to not be considered left, and you know it'll probably get to some really really intense places, and still whichever one comes out on top probably has a 50-50 shot of winning.
Which is
the world we live in. No matter what's going on, every election is going to be like, I don't know, somewhere in the 50-50, 55-45, you know.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. Yeah, and it is pretty grim, because I think, as you properly said earlier, like, you know, like on actual policy differences, there's not really much to separate them. I mean, DeSantis might be more inclined to like put into effect like kind of like laws. But I mean, Trump has, you know, like he did actually get a lot of his people in there, especially on like Department of Homeland Security and Border Patrol. And, you know, like I don't think this argument that Trump is ineffective will convince Republican voters. And then they're both going to be, you know, very bad in, you know, pretty roughly similar ways. So it's kind of worrying. So if they're roughly the same politically, I mean, the real difference is one of personality. And I think that, you know, Trump's kind of, you know, insult comedian / wrestler charisma kind of, you know, I feel like has an edge over, you know, like DeSantis. Well, I'll give you the same thing, but I'm very dweeby and socially awkward, you know, like I just, yeah. Anyways, well, yeah, as you said, we're not really in the prediction game. Yeah, we'll see how it plays out, but that's what it looks like right now. I wanted to actually, but sort of close things out though by talking a little bit about not the content but the form, which is, it appeared on, you know, Twitter Spaces and was hosted by Elon Musk, and it seems like this is part of the broader changes that Musk is sort of introducing into Twitter to really make it not a, you know, social media platform, but to make it a right-wing news outlet of the, you know, like a kind of Fox News for the digital age. And to make himself a player, to make himself like a Rupert Murdoch figure, a kingmaker within that world. Now, you used to have a very strong Twitter presence and have withdrawn, and because of many of the changes that Musk is kind of making. Do you want to like talk about what these changes are and where you think things are going?
So, you know, when Musk first announced that he intended to buy Twitter, you know, he was talking about free speech and he was all of that stuff. And I predicted at the time in April 2022, I said he's going to turn this into 4chan. And he kind of has, you know, if you look at what's happening, and it hasn't necessarily, obviously his commitment to free speech is kind of laughable, because he'll ban accounts that criticize him, and he'll, you know, that thing with the jet that he was just like, no, it was they were putting my assassination coordinates out there, you know, like all that goofy stuff. But yeah, I think it's really started to become clear, especially in recent, you know, especially in the past few weeks, you know, where he announces that Tucker Carlson's going to start doing his show on Twitter, which that kind of surprised me that's what Tucker Carlson would do. That seems like a pretty big step down, but only time will tell. And, you know, and the Daily Wire is going to have all of its podcasts hosted on Twitter now. And, you know, Musk is using, I joke with my wife about this, because Musk is doing with Twitter exactly what I would do with Twitter if I owned it, but in the opposite direction. You know, it's like, yeah, if I owned a giant like media company that I could use to try to get my preferred policies implemented and to try to convince the world to believe more of what I believe, yeah, I would totally do that, you know? And it's probably good that I don't have $44 billion, you know? I mean, that's one of those things where it seems disastrous. And I think it's driving a lot of people away in the sense that it's just not what most people want. He's changing Twitter to pander to his like very specific following, you know, the people who will pay him $8 to appear at the top of a reply thread, rather than, you know, the better move obviously is what Twitter had been doing, which was trying to prioritize the most relevant replies. And not like, because it wasn't always blue check, blue check, blue check, you know, in the replies, but even under the past system, it was things that were relevant, things that weren't got buried. And so now it's like every post has, it's like people with the laughing, crying emojis, you know, and people posting just weird scams. Now there's a thing where under like every other post, there's just some garbled bot text that's like, hello user URL, blah blah blah. And it's, you know, it's the whatever bot problem there was got so much worse when Musk took it over. But you know, it got really hostile for trans people. And I'm trans, and it's one of those things where I look at some of the stuff that, you know, other trans people post on Twitter now, they'll, even if it has nothing to do with trans people, trans issues, they'll like, the replies are filled with just really like over the top mean things, and unnecessarily so. And Musk had the official policy changed to take out the rule against misgendering and dead naming, which hadn't, like, if we're being real, hadn't really been enforced for the past 5 years. You know, it was there, and if someone was really egregious about it, it would be enforced, but it was never consistent. But you know, my point with Twitter really just kind of got to this thing where I was like, is it worth it? Am I benefiting from this enough to justify, you know, dedicating time and energy to this? And when Musk started, you know, limiting Substack links, for instance, like that's not going to help me. You know, when Musk started, you know, doing that and burying things under blue check replies, I mean, I am like the target audience for someone who would be willing to purchase a premium social media product. You know, $96 a year to have extra features, I would do it in a heartbeat. But he lost me. You know, it was one of those things where it just, the benefits of subscribing to a service, the benefits of posting on Twitter just started to disappear. I stopped getting as many referrals to my newsletter through Twitter. I saw that kind of go down. And so I just decided I'm just going to kind of, you know, dedicate my energy elsewhere. And one thing I have found, which is probably not a great commentary for, you know, not a great point for Twitter just generally, is that once I stopped posting on Twitter, I started writing more. I started putting out more newsletters because I wasn't spending as much of my day on Twitter. And, you know, cause it can become a time suck. And so in that sense, I'm happy that, you know, it's, that I'm succeeding in other ways, because my worry was that I would stop using Twitter and I would see like my subscriptions nosedive, and that hasn't really happened. It's plateaued, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. Musk does seem to want to be a player in the right wing media game, and it's funny, you know, seeing him do that, where he's bringing in the Daily Wire and Tucker Carlson and, you know, and doing promos for Ron DeSantis, you know, when he had said in the past, he was like, Twitter should be politically neutral. We should upset the far right as much as the far left. And it's just like that had never been true, but it's really not true now. you know, and a lot of it's built on this idea that, because it has been funny to watch, you know, the the people on the right who had been screaming Twitter has a leftist bias and all of that stuff, like under the past management, a lot of them are still like, I'm being shadow banned. That cat turd account every other day is like, the algorithms got me. It's like, dude, you're getting like 2 million views on everything you post, no matter what it is, no matter how dumb it is, you're getting all sorts of retweets and you still think that it's biased against you. It's like, at a certain point, the issue is not bias. The issue is your own perception of it. That's the problem that Musk has kind of run into, is that he is tilting things in their favor and they're still not happy.
Yeah, no, I think the enterprise of trying to keep cat turd happy seems and actually, I mean, to circle back, cat turd had a very negative comment on the DeSantis thing. He found the Twitter spaces boring, and I think he got out of it like, you know, within 5-10 minutes, just saying like, you know,
because he's a big Trump guy, right?
Like, yeah, that's... yeah, yeah.
You know, so, and he did a poll afterwards that Trump then reposted on Truth Social or whatever, which was just a Twitter poll.
That's right. Yeah. So, Gallup and cat turd.
Gallup and cat turd. Get that in the 538 aggregate.
That's right. I think that's exactly right. That, like, it's capitalism. So, you know, if someone like Musk has that money and wants to create yet another right wing media, he's free to do so. But it is sort of, I think leaving a lot of people stranded or looking for other things. But I mean, if one of the consequences of this is that Elon Musk has gotten Parker Molloy writing more, I say good for her. Good. You have to hand it to Elon Musk. So that's something I'm grateful for.
Need to do my work.
That's right. So I'll encourage, and on that note, I will again encourage people to check out Parker's newsletter. Lots of, you know, very pertinent, strong media criticism and political criticism. I want to thank Parker for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime.